the culture of the organization across years has been, we will bully the next generation because that's what happened to us.
Welcome to the Tomorrow Is Not Today podcast. You've already started to create the life you want just by being here. Designed for you as a business professional so you can be physically, mentally, and emotionally healthy, more productive, less stressed, and living a life you truly love. My name's Kingsley, and thank you for coming on another journey with one of our uniquely qualified professionals. Ian Rumsey, psychologist Ian Rumsey, thank you so much for joining us today on the Tomorrow Is Not Today podcast.
Mate, it's great to be here. Great to see, hear everybody, and I hope you get something amazing out of today. Hopefully. Yeah. And,
I know we will, having known you for, I don't know, it must be nearly 15 years now, although we haven't sort of talked a lot the last few years because you're living in a different state. You've always had goal to add to people's lives, and that's one of the reasons I've asked you to come on. Loving what you're putting out on LinkedIn, and I would definitely encourage everybody go and check out Ian's LinkedIn's because some of the things on there is absolutely gold and could probably help you as well. But Ian, I want to jump in straight away. As we always do in this podcast, let's get straight into it, answer some questions, give some gold that people can unpack straight away, and then we'll go and boil down as some nice little nuggets as we go along. But entrepreneurs, business professionals in various ways, they're a lot of our audience and a lot of who we do as a company. They're dealing with a lot of anxiety, trauma, and mental health and things like that at the moment. So from a psychological perspective, what is something that they can do? You can say, okay, you can do this straight away and it will actually help overcome some of those things. I know it's a big question to start with.
That's a huge question, mate. But yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's there's a couple of things that come to mind straight away. One is, think about psychological issues or things that frame us as sometimes illnesses. And this is something which is something very important when it comes to anxiety in particular or trauma. It doesn't define who you are. So if you can kind of think of, all right, this is something that I need to treat. This is something I need to do or work out with help sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. But if what we were thinking about is differentiating ourselves from the actual thing that's happening inside of us anxiety-wise. So that differentiation is actually critical, really important to keep that mental health above board or I kind of tend to think of anxiety in particular like a storm, and it can hit us as like a sailing boat. We're trying to go from, say, Sydney to LA on a boat, and basically this storm's hitting us and the waves are hitting us and the wind's hitting us. Anxiety is something which can try and block us as we're going in a certain direction. But if we can think of it as separate to ourselves, okay, so it's separate to ourselves, the trauma is separate to ourselves, then we can think of it like, oh, this is like a broken leg. What do I do with a broken leg? Well, I need to go to a medical professional, need to get an x-ray, and I need to get treatment. So straight away, if you can think about if something's hitting you so hard that it's taking you over while you're going in a direction, think about it as an illness and think about, well, I need treatment for this. So some of the first points you do with an illness with anxiety is you need to pick up your rhythms. Like you pick up your rhythms for dealing with the stress. So one of the first things that we do when we have someone with anxiety, depression come and see us is we send them to the gym. So we go, you need to get to the gym, and that'll burn a lot of the byproducts of anxiety and stress, which predominantly is a thing called cortisol and adrenaline. And so when you're actually at the gym, you're burning it off, you're feeling better, you're getting noradrenaline, adrenaline, but you're also getting basically endorphins as well, which just make you feel better. I actually remember reading a couple of months ago a book called The 5 a.m. Club. I did it for about 2 weeks and I couldn't get up at 5 a.m. anymore. And that was quite funny for me because my rhythms don't start that early. But it was, I liked the concept where you're basically looking at anxiety and stress as part of something that we all need to deal with as entrepreneurs. And yet we need methods on how to do that, but also seeing it's not as you, okay? It's not as who yourself is. That's, I think, really important. Then just be appropriate in the way you're addressing that illness. The second thing I wanted to say, and this is sort of kind of counter to what I just said, is when it comes to trauma, like sometimes trauma happens when we're a kid or when we're, you know, going through life. And sometimes what we can see as negative is actually our superpower. So I'll give you an example. Is when I was growing up as a kid, I experienced a fair bit of trauma, hence why I'm a psychologist, I think. But then I remember my parents always saying to me, look, and you're really sensitive, you're too sensitive, you're ultra sensitive. And what I didn't realize later in life was that's actually my superpower. So my superpower is basically empathy. It's like my number one on my strengths profile. And so sometimes when we go through trauma, how we view trauma, how we view sometimes those wounds can actually develop into a superpower. It actually can develop into something. It's like a two-edged sword. It's like something can take us down, but at the same time, something that could propel us as well. So what you see with both those things that I'm talking about there, Kingsley, and everyone that's listening, it's about how we view the situation that's the key. So it's not actually we're always going to take a red pill or a silver pill to get out of a situation like anxiety or trauma. It's the viewing or the perspective we have, which then empowers us to walk through it. So that's a lot of psychology in about 5 minutes, but that's sort of roughly, you know, what we're talking about. Yeah,
that was absolutely fantastic. And that's what I said at the beginning. You always do bring those nuggets of gold. I think that was a big rock, that one. But there was some really important points in there that I want to pull out that I want to emphasize that you said is one, your anxiety is not you. It's not you as a person.
Yep.
It's like you said, a broken leg. It's not who you are. That's just something that needs to be dealt with. I think that is one of the biggest keys that people often do think they are that. Yep. And in fact, the whole tomorrow is not today is about we think this is who we are and view the world from our perspective right now, not understanding that tomorrow can be a completely different, much better day than what it is. And it will be as well. As we go through life.
Yeah.
Great. I think that's fantastic to do that. It's not you, and your whatever is bad can actually be your superpower. That's fantastic, and I'll guarantee that a lot of people out there are exactly the same as you. They've had stuff happen to them, but they've taken that now and using that to help so many other people. I think that's one of the greatest gifts of life.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's such an interesting thing, like when we're talking about anxiety as well, and in particular with entrepreneurs, I've found across the years, one of the biggest thing that dogs business people and entrepreneurs is a sense of failure or a feeling of failure. And I still remember being involved in a business venture up in the Gold Coast actually many years ago, and it totally and utterly failed, like totally and utterly, totally tanked. A whole series of it was like a perfect storm happened, and I was in the middle of this storm, and I still remember Googling failure, and there's all these anti-motivational posters, and the Googling, I was really emotional, and I was like, what's failure? And I personally was really hammered by it, and I remember Googling these anti-motivational posters, and I had this guy at a track and field event, and he was holding his hands, and it had failure. Even when your very best is just not good enough. And I started giggling. And then I started laughing. Then I started belly laughing. And those were like some of those moments in time when you realize failure is just an event that sometimes happens when you're an entrepreneur or a business person, but it does not define you. It doesn't make you who you are. And I love the name of your podcast, mate. It's brilliant. Because it's so true. Because it's like these things can sometimes try and take us out, and people talk about that winning mindset and all that kind of stuff, but it's really kind of like, well, who are we? And then flourishing in who we are. And of course, things are going to happen, which, you know, sometimes we'll fail. Sometimes we'll fall on our face. Sometimes things will happen, but it's sort of kind of get back up and keep moving, knowing that that doesn't define us, that fear of failure doesn't define us. I still remember laughing at those anti-motivated, because I grew up in the 80s. You have all these motivational posters, you know, like teamwork and everyone's rowing, and there's like they're all in boardrooms and stuff. And then I saw these anti-motivation, it just made me laugh, mate. It was this, and it was a beautiful moment in a sense, because it was like humor actually was medicine in that moment. And sometimes having a good laugh at yourself, and obviously, you know, paying your bills as well, but like it's like a combi a bit where you're just kind of going, okay. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, hope that helps someone today.
Absolutely, and it's good to understand, because everyone's going through different stuff at different times. Mm. And it's good to, when you're in that, to be able to know that's what's going on. Here's how I deal with it, which is awesome. Speaking of laughing at yourself, the picture behind you. Now, you know what I'm going to say. It's every one of us has an issue with you right now.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
100%, mate. We actually do it deliberately. I know it sounds random, but sometimes one of the things that, you know, dogs, clients, is a thing called OCD. And so people, when they're like so frustrated in the middle of a session, as we do predominantly Zoom sessions, and especially over COVID and that, but it was like we were doing it deliberately just to see and flag who is at what stage when it comes to their OCD and stuff. So we're kind of, and we're just seeing, because sometimes with psychs, you know, we don't deliberately play on people's noggins, but it's like, I just want to see if anyone has a real big issue with it and what are they going to do about it. I find with that picture in particular, we've kind of like plastered it down to the wall now, but it's like beforehand, it actually fell off once when I was having a session, someone sitting on the couch. So that was frustrating. So we do it as a little bit of a test, mate. I don't know if that sounds random, but we just see how people go. I do tend to find entrepreneurs have a little bit of, everyone has OCD, by the way, but there's a little bit of that, oh, you know, this needs to be perfect kind of moment. So we kind of test that out a little bit. So if you're having issues with this, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like, it's just one of those.
Too bad. Yeah.
It's too bad. It's just the way it is.
You can give him a call. He can fix you up.
Yeah, we can fix you up. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's funny. Super that's funny, awesome. Mate. You got me. But you know what? Something just came to mind that you said there is the fact that when you go through stuff in life, you actually learn to go, okay, that's what it is. Let's move on. It just is. And I think it's not until you've actually gone through a bunch of stuff in life you learn to do that. So I got to learn to get over your camera. And I think I'm doing okay right now. I'll let you know later on.
You're doing good, mate. You're doing good.
Hey, Ian, in the...
What's the question with that, mate? Yeah, tell us.
So in the intro, you know, you've dealt with pretty much everything in pretty much most scenarios. You're registered to be able to deal with a whole bunch of various situations and things like that. And one of the big things that that I think is incredibly important for people to grab, and with all of your psychological experience, over 15,000 hours, it's that is a lot of time face-to-face with people. That's huge. With all of that, understanding that we as a people are one person. Now, what I mean is quite often we'll be at home and we'll be one person at home, and then let's say we have a fight with the kids or the spouse or the whatever's going on, or someone got upset somewhere, and then we go to work and we think, that's okay, that's left behind, I'm going to work, I've now got on my entrepreneur face, my business face, my whatever it is, and I'm a completely different person, that doesn't affect me. But as we know, it does affect us. We can push it down for a little bit, but there's an effect there.
Yeah.
How do we, I guess, help that not to affect our work, or what are the things we can do? Because obviously, you know, you're qualified with the Gottman Institute for couples counseling as well, which is phenomenal. And that would be a big part of this whole scenario, I would imagine. So can you step us through a few different things maybe you've dealt with, or ways to help people through that?
Yeah, great, mate. Yeah, the Gottman Institute, by the way, is phenomenal, and the data coming out of that institute is phenomenal. A lot of marriage counseling people in general have a good experience in their marriage and then project it out in a book. Gottman Institute basically monitored marriages for 40 years with basically pure science, and just observed couples doing things well, so that we just replicate that basically, and just go, the science it's teaching us is how to do well. So it actually works in multiple different marriage situations. I think, you know, in answer to your question, one of the things that we work with quite a lot with people that are really busy and driven is they tend to be not necessarily aware of their emotional capacity. And we also grow up in a country, especially around males, that there's not a lot of emotional understanding or understanding of your own emotions, but also the needs of other people's emotions. And so when it comes to emotional capacity, And the Gottmans point this out as well in their research, is that often couples that are masters in their relationship have regular rituals that they have in their marriage to emotionally connect. And so when you're really busy and you're an entrepreneur and you're working really flat out, often the statement can be, well, I'm doing this for the family, I'm doing this for my wife. Whereas really, sometimes the kids and the wife don't really care how much you're working, they just want you around and have emotional availability. And just a funny story, I remember years ago, again on the Gold Coast, learned a lot of things on the Gold Coast, was basically, I remember one night after doing 11 sessions on one day, which was stupid, wow. It was ridiculous. And, really, heart goes out to that 11th session. If you're that 11th session, that I'm sorry, basically, because I think I was a pancake in that last session, right, emotionally. Anyway, my wife picked me up. And we just had one car at the time, and she picked me up and we're driving home and she said, look, you give your clients the gold. And she goes, I get the slops. That's literally the word she said. And I remember just being so upset because I'm like, I'm doing this for you. Oh, I'm doing this for you, kind of thing. And the kids, but it started a great conversation when it comes to how much capacity emotionally am I spending every day in my business? And how much capacity have I got left, or really want to prioritize my kids and my wife? When I've had sessions where people are talking about trauma and emotions and all that kind of stuff, my kids don't know that when I get home. They don't even care. Often they just want dad to give them a hug. They want, to talk about their day. They want to, they don't really, and I've talked to other people, they've been big, managers of massive funds and different things. And, the kids don't care and don't care how many billions you've traded that day. Like they don't, it's like whatever. So for kids in particular and for our spouses, I always try and think of 80-20, where it's like 80% of my emotions to be spent at work and then saving 20% for home. And so the real practical kind of balance, Gottman backs this up as well with the research, is that if we're, spending 120% at work all the time, and then we end up with $20 million, but we have no family, our kids don't talk to us, you've got to look at our measure of success. Now, some people might go, yeah, that's success, not to me. And this is the sort of things that you want to evaluate and decide in your heart. What are the measures of success? And then start building those habits. Like what I was saying before with anxiety, it's building in habits that handle stress. But the same thing when it comes to emotional capacity and work and availability is you want to build in habits and rituals into your day-to-day and week-to-week. Another example is we just went on a retreat over the weekend and we took our kids horse riding and it was hilarious. It was the most fun experience. It's way too expensive, but anyway. But it was like it was just like a half-hour horse riding trip. But they were talking about it nonstop. They're going to be jockeys. They're going to take over the world with horses. And it was just a great emotional family experience, but we needed margin to do that. We needed financial margin. We needed emotional margin. We needed time margin. And if we don't have any margin, there's no experiences. So yeah, hope that answers some of those things.
Yeah, that's really good because I think that's an area where we try to, I won't go there because then it might open up stuff. But I think what you said is really help with, okay, this, to me, knowing that I need that margin, I need to make sure I've got that much for home, for my kids, for my wife, for whatever, that needs to be there in that place. So that was really, really good. One of the other things... go on.
Sorry, Matt, I just wanted to say really clearly too, I'm self-disclosing a couple of stories just to show what a boofhead I actually am in my own relationships. Because sometimes when people talk about rhythms and they kind of people can feel like, oh, he's aiming for perfection. And I'm like, no, the data actually researched around this says if you get it right 40% of the time, you're streaks ahead of everyone else. So I'm actually deliberately using stories about myself and what a boofhead I have been at times and sometimes still am, just to show, even as a trained psychologist, we want to aim for, just from a heart point of view, just to do that very best for our families and our relationships. It's not about perfection. It's not about perfection. Yeah. So yeah, just segue for that one.
It's good. And it's really interesting. The people we interview on this podcast, they always bring us their stories of reality. And it's great because people can see that none of us are perfect. The reason I actually got into this, I've always wanted to help people, but my big thing was going through divorce and knowing I needed to become a bigger, better person and I need to be someone for my kids. So I spent years and years and years learning, growing, just putting myself through challenges, doing whatever I could. So none of this is from perfection at all. It's all a matter of us all learning and growing and implementing. And I think that's the best thing because every one of us has been through life in some way. Yeah. So, I appreciate you saying that. It's really good. One of the other things, and I'm really not sure quite how to ask this as a question, but it's one thing I've noticed. I do a lot of networking and meeting up with people at different events and things like that. And then you catch up with people for coffee afterwards. And people go to work and they've got this, it's like the business face on or the business hat, and that's who they are. But as soon as you catch up outside of that and you start actually talking to people, the amount of times I've seen people go from this type of person to a, that it's just, they let themselves out a little bit. And I've noticed by doing that, that's when connection can happen. And the real things where you can actually start working, you find out who people really are and how you can actually really help them in their business and they can help you in your business, which is what it's all about to me. Could you explain a little bit about how to be able to do that as a business professional or entrepreneur or whatever it is, to be able to do that, to be, I guess, a little bit vulnerable, but at the same time being professional and how that actually helps? Because I think it's a big, big thing.
Yeah, it's great, mate. Yeah, you struck on probably one of the major drivers in life, and it's actually shame. So people don't disclose things because they feel fundamentally that there's something wrong with themselves. And most people have shame to some capacity. So some have no shame, which is kind of, on the extreme scale, that's a little bit dangerous. But when it comes to having shame, so to give you an example, Kingsley, when you go to an environment, you'll actually be in a structured environment. This is how you behave in that business forum environment. Okay. And this is how, and you don't break those boundaries. You're just part of that group, a little bit like school. Like we all grew up all listening, you know, to the teacher and be respectful, and we'd get punished if we weren't, or, you know, there was consequences for that for most of us, you know. And so these are the environments that we get used to, and it's shame on you if you break that boundary. Okay. So then when it comes to doing one-on-one catch-ups or having a lunch or having a coffee or something or having a beer or whatever, often that shame boundary disappears because you're one-on-one and there's some sort of safety involved, okay? Mm. So when it comes to businesses and how do we do that quicker, often it's the safety that we create in that environment, okay? And then it's then also sometimes self-disclosure in that environment at the level that you want it to be is the second thing that you do. So say you're having a business team meeting and people are afraid to disclose information that might make them look shameful. It's actually just create some safety around that environment so they can feel safe to disclose that, okay? Now there are also points back to, well, how are we leading our organizations? Are they fear-based organizations? That there's massive ramifications if you report wrongly, right? Or not appropriately, or whatever the bad thing is, right? Or are we an unconditional love-based organization, which again is an ideal, but it's almost like what kind of leadership are we putting out there? So it's sort of a little bit like, so I'll give you an example. We had a staff member recently said it's so easy to approach me and my wife and talk about issues because they'd worked in previous psychology outfits where the psychologists were like the gurus, but they were in this ivory tower. And we've worked hard to deliberately create an environment and are creating an environment. Our team isn't big, but we're creating an environment where people feel that it's not a shame-based culture or a fear-based leadership culture. It's actually, now that often happens at the outset of how you're structuring your team meetings, how you're structuring your roles. it's also quite a lot of internal reflection as well, like how are you leading and what's your motivation? So there's lots of discussions around that and thoughts around that, reflections around that. But you're striking right at the heart of it, Kingsley, because it's sort of shame really does affect our culture and society. And I find it fascinating being in environments because I deal with this all the time. I sometimes deliberately be cheeky. And my wife is so funny because she's like, why did you say that? And I'm like, because I just wanted to make everyone, you know, just break that shame barrier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said some word at an outing the other day and everyone just went, what the heck? Like, you know, and it was because you're trying to break that shame barrier.
Yeah.
And so then people loosen up, you know, loosen up and feel a bit more relaxed to share. There's a lot in that, though. I know what you're saying. And yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. It's interesting where it actually comes from and, you know, pointing it down to, okay, this is how we behave in this environment and what we do and that sort of thing, which is really cool. I want to now...
The research around that... Oh.
Go for it, mate.
Sorry, I keep cutting in when you ask questions, mate. The researcher who's brilliant around that is a lady called Brené Brown, who I'm sure many people have heard of. But Brené Brown, if you hadn't, she's got some stuff on Netflix. She's the guru when it comes to shame and guilt and all that kind of gear. So bit of a shout out to Brené.
Yeah, definitely. I want to touch on something that's becoming a bigger and bigger issue, particularly in Australia right now. It probably is in various other countries, I would imagine, as well. But I know in Australia it's becoming a bigger issue. The governments are looking at implementing, well, they have actually started implementing various rules around this and laws and that sort of thing that sort of, again, pinpoints, makes it hard for some small businesses, but it's stuff that needs to be dealt with. I'm very much, let's be proactive about these things. Let's not wait and see what happens and blame somebody else for it and get them to deal with it, but I need to take responsibility for myself. That's how I like to approach it. And the whole area of mental health specifically. So when it comes to work, because there's a lot of things at work that can create a lot of this stress in various ways. And it could be bosses, it could be clients, it could be time restraints, it could be all sorts of things. What can we do personally from a psychological perspective? What can we do as an individual to say, you know what, I'm going to deal with this myself and make me a better person?
Yep. So as an individual employed or as someone employing other people, mate?
Yeah. Both. Yeah, both ways. So I take responsibility for my mental health, whether I'm the boss, whether I'm an employee, whether I'm a manager level, whatever it is. To take responsibility personally for our own mental health. Because I figure that if we're more proactive with it, A, we're not going to deal with it anywhere near as much and it may not even hit us too much, if at all, if we can deal with some things. Now, obviously, everyone's different and I don't want to, you know, let anyone feel guilty because maybe they are dealing with it, whereas other people, because everyone's situation is completely varied. But what are things we can do personally to be proactive about this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great call, mate. Yeah. I'm thinking about during COVID days, we were swamped as mental health practitioners with the mental health issues. I remember coming into work one day. This is sort of the second year of COVID. It was around March. And just to put it in perspective, I'd normally get about 5 cases of burnout in about 12 years, right? So that's, and I had 5 cases of burnout by March that year. Wow. And so we had a rapid increase in people just, you know, being burnt to a crisp just because of the massive changes in roles and the way we did work and all that kind of stuff. And so I think when it comes to your own mental health, is look very genuinely look at the rhythms that you have. And remembering when it comes to mental health, if these are illnesses, if these are things that we need treatment for, it's actually the first point of call is to check in with your GP. And so check in with your GP as a reference point. You know, if you're finding yourself having lots of sick days, if you're finding yourself feeling really flat, if you're finding yourself thinking suicidal thoughts or thinking stuff that's very dark, check in with your GP. You know, talk to a mate that you really trust and feel safe with, that you feel that shame thing isn't an issue. Chat with someone about it, you know, it could be a local priest or pastor or rabbi or someone, and but just someone you feel safe with and that you can sort of talk to. GPs are great like that in our society. And it's okay to reach out. It really is. Like, it's okay to go, look, I'm not coping. Remember a mate of mine once, he was going through a role transition. This is years ago. And he said he went to work one morning. He said, I just can't work this out. And he said it to himself a few times. He realized, I can't work this out. And then he went, I can't work this out. I need help. Right? And so he went to his GP, contacted a friend who connected him with a psychologist, and they helped them work it out or on the journey to it. Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of like this kind of space where when we can't work out what to work out, right, that's what we can do. And that's really proactive.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I think, yeah, 100%. And sometimes the whole goal of this too, and I kind of wanted to really emphasize this, is when we remove the anxiety or we remove or get proactive in dealing with it, we can then run. I mean, we can run in what we feel like we're created to do. We can actually, the whole purpose of it isn't to be medicalized. It's actually so you can fly. That's the whole point of it. The whole point of dealing with the mental health isn't to be full of shame and full of, you know, great, I've got to eat gravel for the next five months or something. It's actually, hey, let's deal with the issue so then you can run hard and be better. Do you know what I mean? Be more amazing and be incredible in what you're going to do. Now, there's lots of individual circumstances with that, and there's different illnesses that people deal with, so I'm not going to cover all those kinds of things, but the main ones are really anxiety, depression, burnout really at the moment. When it comes to an employer, I think, and I don't know the laws like totally myself, so but from my understanding in the areas I do work in, it's just being reasonable. So it's not being unreasonable with your staff's requests. It's being reasonable. When I talked about a fear-based culture and a, you know, like a supportive-based culture, that's actually quite important to mental health in an organization. So I've worked with a number of organizations that have quite a fear-based culture. And so often they're moving into spaces where there's bullying in the workplace. And so that's a work cover issue we deal with. And a lot of it's because the culture of the organization across years has been, we will bully the next generation because that's what happened to us. Mm. And it's sort of, it's perpetuating cycles. So you've got to kind of look at that and go, you know, what sort of environment am I in? How am I achieving performance? And is that performance, because we all need to produce something if we're in the workplace. I mean, that's kind of why we're employed, right, is to produce. But how are we getting those results? And so it's really sort of asking, well, are we being reasonable? If someone has a request for us for sick leave, are we yelling at them and texting them, you're an effing idiot, you know, which I've seen in situations, you know, people having a root canal and then they got texted by their boss that they're an effing, you know, all this sort of stuff. And it's like, wow, like what kind of employer is doing that and why are you doing it? And like, you know, obviously it's pressure and stress from whoever their upline is, whatever. But it's not, it's again, what sort of cultures are we building as employers? And are we being reasonable? Like, and you know, you can kind of give yourself the pub test for that one. You know, like you can
talk to
your mates at the pub and go, are you, do you think that's reasonable? And if they look, you know, if you're swearing at your employee, probably not. You know, like it's probably not that reasonable. And again, you know, so there's a couple of thoughts with that, both individually. And so individually, it's actually taking responsibility. Okay. That's probably the key. As an employer, it's probably being reasonable. Do you know what I mean? Like being reasonable in not in, in your approach to your staff. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, because I know a question like that is like you've got about 3 million different scenarios to cover. I think you did it well by giving a good summary. And if you do approach things that way, you're right. It pretty much, you know, it helps, and the culture is such a major, major thing, which is really cool. And that seems to be coming up pretty much every podcast, is that whole thing about culture in the workplace. So that's it's obviously a major, major thing. Now, we're coming to the end. I wish we weren't, but unfortunately we have to. But at the end of each podcast, I always ask a question. And that is, and then there's a follow-up question that goes with it. We talk a lot about creating the ultimate tomorrow on here because that's what it's about. Not ultimate tomorrow obviously is not utopia, but it's what we want to be, what we want to do, the life that we want to live, really. In your words, in your estimation, either as a psychologist or personally, what is the ultimate tomorrow?
Wow. Okay. That's a big question, mate. Is that for myself individually or is it? Oh, right. Okay.
Or both.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a personal belief, which is aligned very much to my faith, which is that, you know, we've basically been, you know, made to some extent, you know, by a maker. And my ultimate tomorrow is to be running in what I've been made for, and help other people run as well. And so that's what I was trying to say earlier on. You know, mental health, I see, and often what I hear from clients regularly is, I want to live my best life now, and this mental health thing's getting in the way. And I totally understand that. I totally get that mental health is not the goal. Like, it's not to sit and wallow in our depression or anxiety. It's to treat it, but then it's to run. And so to me, people's ultimate tomorrows are you running to the capacity that you feel like you're made for, and how can we help? You know, and that would actually be what I think I'm made for. So that actually then is my ultimate tomorrow too. Now, we're building a team around that concept. We're building a team around that concept that it's not always about fixing people, but it's about removing things so people can run. And that's really, I suppose, my ultimate tomorrow. My wife and I, that's what we feel like we're designed for. Yeah.
Now, the follow-up question to that is, how do you create the ultimate tomorrow?
Yeah, great, mate. Really good question. I personally think exactly what you're doing, Kingsley, is right on point, is that I often find there's gaps in my mind when it comes to coaching, when it comes to skills, when it comes to motivation. I regularly have gaps in my noggin around those areas, and as a business owner myself. And paying people, employing people, getting people to help you fill those gaps to then reach to that ultimate tomorrow. We've just engaged a coaching team around, you know, private practice recently, who are specialists in that area. And they've been absolutely phenomenal. And I'm like, where have you been all my life? And it's been so great to motivate. And this is why I specifically think, Kingsley, what you're doing, and in this podcast too, is encouraging and motivating people to then join those dots, because I think those people are there. There's people that have gone beyond us. There's people that are turning over million-dollar businesses beyond us, and we can engage them and say, how do you deal with that, and how do you fix this? And, you know, next step psychology and counseling, what we do is really help specifically with the mental health component of that. But it's like, you know, not holding back to then engage those people, go, look, I've got a problem here. Who's a specialist here? Let me engage them. And then you remove that block and then keep running. And that can be all over the place. It can be accountancy. It can be business planning. It can be, you know, whatever it is, you know, cash flow management, you know, you name it, you know, there's all these different spaces. They're only the business ones. There's multiple other ones too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Mate, thank you so much. As I said at the beginning, I knew it would happen. There's so much gold there to pull back. I think it's one of those things we need to listen to two or three times to actually pull out little bits, because you've covered so many people in just short spaces of time with everything. But the coverage of what you've done is a great summary of what we can do. So how can people, if people want to follow up with you, whether they want to make an appointment, follow you on LinkedIn or wherever, what's the best way people can get in touch and follow you?
Yeah, definitely, mate. Yeah, LinkedIn. If you go in LinkedIn, just my personal profile, Ian Rumsey. On that, there's a link to our website, nextsteppsychology.com.au. You can book an appointment there. We do Zoom. So we actually have clients around the world, actually, internationally, literally, which is really awesome. Time zone things, interesting. But the and then just sign up at Next Step, and you'll regularly get our blogs, which are different to the LinkedIn. So the LinkedIn is probably more little snippet and snacks. But also our blogs on our website, you'll get a real gist of the way we think and the way we practice as well, which is along the lines of what we've been talking about today. And I'm happy to support people any way they need it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Ian, thank you so much. Lots of gold there, as we said. Really appreciate you coming on the Tomorrow Is Not Today podcast, and have a fantastic day.
You too, mate. Thank you. Cheers, buddy.